Welcome back to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. It's the early week Barons edition, and wow, are we bringing in the star power today. I know I say that a lot of people who come on this show are among my very favorite people in the fantasy community, but that's just me flattering folks like Denny Carter. It's not real. Today, I actually mean it. Today, we are joined by a giant in the fantasy space, a longtime Roto-World analyst, Patrick Daugherty. I'm not sure if you're like the blurb czar exactly at Roto-World, but that's what I'm going to run with here. You know him on Twitter as at Roto-Pat. Man, the mustache is just glorious. It's hard to tear my eyes away from it. What's up, Pat? How you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, I am the blurb czar these days. That used to be the great Evan Silva. It is now me. I've been really, really, really enjoying mustache life like so much. You get people tweeting at you all day saying you look like Don Mattingly. It's very empowering.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm just seeing that now for the first time. I've cycled through a lot of different. Kinda, yeah, wow.
But I have to say, there's an announcement. This might be the last public appearance of the mustache.
No.
Because I was talking to Andy off camera. You know, we're having a child very soon. I don't know if I want this to be the first thing my newborn daughter sees. So after the podcast, I might be shaving. So I had to leave it for this, but this might be the last public. I'm not saying it's gone forever, but this might be the last public appearance of this iteration of the mustache.
So the basic concept of this show today was going to be that we were going to do a sweep of all these teams with new head coaches, new offensive coordinators, see where they're at in a really odd off season and in a really odd camp season. But we have breaking news. We have like a real thing that happened in the NFL, like on a Monday morning, that I feel like we have to get to, and we have to spin a little bit. Leonard Fournette was released by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Had this happened, I don't know, a couple months ago, it wouldn't have even been a huge surprise, right? Because he was on the trade block. As Doug Marrone has since said, they couldn't get a fifth rounder for him. They couldn't get a sixth rounder for him. No one was interested in acquiring Leonard Fournette at any cost. They finally got through most of camp and then released him. So there's a couple different angles that we need to take here. And one will be, I mean, shoot, one could be outmoded by the time this podcast hits, and we maybe will have an idea of where he's going to land. But we should talk about potential landing spots for Fournette, and we should talk about what this leaves in Jacksonville. Who, if anyone, have you been adding?
First off, I'll say with Fournette, a really lovely send-off by the Jaguars, by the way, too, announcing, you know, we tried. No one would give us literally anything for this bum. So, you know, yeah, definitely a lovely send-off, yeah, the kind you'd want there. And I'd also say, I'm not going to mention the show because it's a show I enjoy, but just Saturday I was on a radio show where I said I still wouldn't be surprised if Leonard Fournette got released. And the guy, I got shouted down, literally. So I'm feeling vindication now.
Get a copy of that audio clip. I mean, that's awesome.
What a strange situation, because you know, the Jags, I mean, you can't say they didn't telegraph this. I mean, they told anyone who would listen in the spring that they would trade Fournette for basically anything, including a seventh round pick, which they said they could not get. So like this has been out there, and it is weird, like you said, the timing, especially because I was all over Rykel Armstead all summer. Like, I have him on so many teams, but then he missed 3 weeks with coronavirus, and I don't really know. I don't even remember if you asked what to make of his backfield or where Fournette might end up, but I just don't know what to make. I loved Rykel Armstead all summer. I thought he was like the cheapest hedge in the world. He never really developed an ADP. He was mostly free, like in any kind of draft. And I still think I like Rykel Armstead as like the guy to emerge victorious. But, you know, then you got the weird Chris Thompson, maybe the guy in the red zone, recent blurb we had in Roto-World. You know, Divine Ozigbo is always kind of out there in fantasy land. So strange timing when it's so close to the season. Things are so unsettled with Rykel Armstead. And I'm comfortable telling people I really have no idea what to make of the post-Leonard Fournette landscape in the Jags backfield. But that I'm still betting on Rykel just because I think he makes the most overall sense. But yeah, I do not know.
Yeah, he definitely had the positioning on the depth chart. At least we think he did. He is the guy that, you know, I did kind of the jerk fantasy expert move where you go out and you make the ads before you do any tweeting about the situation, right? So as soon as this broke, I go out and I add. I see Brad Evans, who I'm in a couple leagues with. Brad is tweeting about the situation, and I'm going to our mutual leagues to add Reichwell Armstead ahead of him before he actually gets himself offline.
Frankly, just shocking from Brad. Shocking lack of awareness from Brad.
Yeah, exactly. So I picked up a couple of Reichwell Armstead shares today. I already had a little bit of exposure to Chris Thompson, mostly because of the Jay Gruden thing. And that was the sort of topic that we were going to talk about on this podcast, right? Like these OC changes. There's a couple of points of familiarity on this Jaguars roster. One is Tyler Eifert for Jay Gruden, and the other is Chris Thompson. Obviously, we not that Chris Thompson is any sort of good bet to stay healthy over 16 games or maybe even 13 games or whatever, but we can be reasonably sure that he's going to get a huge percentage of all those wasted receptions that went to Fournette last year, right? He caught 76 balls, didn't score a touchdown on any of them, was pretty inefficient. A lot of that workload is going to go to Chris Thompson, I would assume. So if it's any sort of PPR league, I think Thompson is the safest ad, and then I'm with you on Armstead. I would say that if there's a sleeper there, some of the locals have been talking up James Robinson, who was a small college guy from Illinois State. He was actually an Illinois like high school legend. This guy might be the record holder for yardage and scoring in the state of Illinois, like a really good player out of Rockford, who landed at Illinois State and I think has done really well in camp. Who knows? I don't have eyes on the Jacksonville Jaguars camp, but it seems anyway like Armstead is the number one. Everybody else a little bit of a flyer.
Yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time talking about Armstead. I mean, we probably should be focusing. So Armstead, I feel like, I mean, I think the path is there, but we are, like you said, we know the path is there with Chris Thompson. Like, yeah, he's got that third down roll. You know, in theory, there's room to grow. I think maybe I can't speak for you. I mean, maybe there's not actually room. If anyone knows, so we know Jay Gruden knows Chris Thompson better than any other coach in the NFL. And Jay Gruden probably understands that if you shouldn't give Chris Thompson a bigger workload than he's been used to in his career that he can handle. Because, I mean, even on like this like role player workload, he still breaks down. And it's a shame because he really is still one of the better pure pass catching backs in the NFL. If you're wondering who is like the known commodity, what do we know about this backfield? We know that Chris Thompson will catch passes. I'm still this, maybe it's a trap, just like falling into the unknown upside angle with Reichwell Armstead, which I believed in for a lot of the summer. Like I guess I still kind of believe in, even though you said some of the things James Robinson, like that could be a thing. We clearly, they must like the running backs, or maybe they don't. Maybe it was like the Rams. They were just over Todd Gurley. Maybe the Jags just totally over Leonard Fournette. But, Chris Thompson is the only one we know what his role will be. And I'm still, I feel comfortable gambling on Reichwell Armstead, but it is that. It's a gamble. I have to be honest that it's just a gamble.
This is also a team that is just going to be chasing points all year, right? Nobody expects the defense to be particularly good. That's why we're all pretty much into DJ Chark, Chenault, most of the ass, but like there's a path for Gardner Minshew to be a little bit of at least a super flex sleeper here. And Chris Thompson's going to be a huge part of that as well. I mean, they're just going to be like, they're going to be playing from behind for a significant percentage of their season. They're strong.
All
candidate.
Of the season?
Pretty much all of the season. Strong candidate to put the ball in the air 600 plus times. So, like the early down.
Sorry to interrupt you. What if we get a 2019 Dolphins situation and Gardner Minshew is the leading rusher with like 330 yards?
Which is like sneaky in play. He was a pretty good, not a bad running quarterback. Yeah, totally. I like that because I have a couple of, Minshew shares as well. I'd be perfectly fine with that. Landing spots for Leonard Fournette. Like the most obvious one to me, so maybe this is the Bears fan in me. I don't even know if this is like a hate your team sort of Bears fan thing to say, but like Fournette is an obvious candidate to come to Chicago. I suppose David Montgomery has a groin injury. We don't yet know his status for opening week, but he could be compromised at least through September. It's the kind of injury where you tend to worry, wow, is there going to be a recurrence of this? Are we just going to be talking about groin issues and connective tissue issues with David Montgomery all year, right? So Fournette is a candidate to land in Chicago. Where else? What are you hoping for? What are you guessing on?
I'll tell you, really needs a running back because the Jacksonville Jaguars. the Bears, I mean, we don't like saying the things that seem the most obvious, but the Bears, you know, I thought were a candidate to sign a veteran even before David Montgomery got hurt. I mean, it's such a thin backfield, such a thin skill core. Like the Bears, I wrote several times this summer, had no margin for skill, no margin for error with their injury, with their skill players. And of course, they've gotten one 3 weeks before the season starts. So the Jaguars do make, or the Bears, that time was not a joke when I said the Jaguars make lesson. The Bears do, they're going to come up a lot because they make sense. I mean, we're just, it's an obvious dot connector. It makes total sense. Another team that I've been thinking all summer would sign a veteran is the Tennessee Titans. Just because they have nothing behind Derrick Henry whatsoever. They don't really know what Darrington Evans is ready for, but that's probably not going to happen. But the Titans have a like basically a black hole on their running back depth chart behind Derrick Henry. I know the Washington football team, they've got a lot of backs, but it's kind of the classic. They have five backs, so they really have any backs. I still, Adrian Peterson probably still doesn't get enough credit from the fantasy community. He's like actually good. Frank Gore at this stage of his career, even though he's
perfect,
like
he was perfectly fine last year, right? It was 4.3 yards per carry. He was fine, but like we know what he can't do, and we know what he can do. Yeah,
hopefully not the 49ers. I don't think that will happen, right? But yeah, I don't know. It's a guy who's been so disappointing. I mean, the Patriots too. I mean, we have to mention the Patriots, I guess. The Patriots, I was shocked when they did not add a running back over the offseason, which to me told me they either still inexplicably loved Sony Michel or they really, really liked Damian Harris, which was also kind of inexplicable since they like didn't involve him last year. But the Patriots, another team on paper, certainly makes sense. I mean, Lamar Miller's still on the PUP list. Sony Michel is Sony Michel. He's probably still a big enough name that hopefully the podcast isn't outdated. Like he hasn't signed by the time we're done talking, but he'll find a new home this week. But nothing that's like jumped off the page really, except the Bears. But even that is not a perfect fit.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm surprised the Bears haven't taken care of at least a backup role. Like Devontae Freeman's been sitting out there. I don't know exactly what Devontae Freeman is asking for. I don't know exactly what that situation is. It was kind of incredible that David Montgomery had dodged all those bullets, though, right? Carlos Hyde not signing in Chicago, Devontae Freeman not yet signing there. So that still looms. I guess I would throw the Rams out there as a little bit of a possibility, not a high percentage possibility. I'm with you on the Patriots as well. I could totally see that. They have a nice little history with reclamation projects. And Fournette is definitely a reclamation project at this point.
He is. Bill Belichick seems to really like big names, too. I mean, we always like make fun of teams like the Raiders for like the Texans for loving big names. But Bill Belichick is, I mean, he's always been a big name adder. So I would not be surprised.
The Texans wouldn't, would they?
No. Oh, God.
But like 1%, 1% they might?
Yeah, I mean, there's a non-0% chance with Bill O'Brien. You have to just put that out there. We'd be neglect to not put that on the pod. I say maybe the Chargers, my boy Justin Jackson. I haven't seen how serious it was. So supposedly picked up like a little injury over the weekend. And people have high hopes for Joshua Kelly, but you know, the COVID year, none of the rookies getting any reps whatsoever. I would say never with the Chargers too, but yeah, I mean,
I'm actually with you on Justin Jackson. He was pretty good last year.
No, I mean, he's like the classic small sample set, I mean, it's like efficiency, his numbers like pop off the page and kind of someone who I felt at the very least had earned, you know, the opportunity to see if that would transfer to a bigger sample size. And he's someone else like Reichel Armstead I've been adding at the end of almost every draft. So I'm hoping that he is healthy for week one because he's someone I'm very intrigued by Justin Jackson's big playability.
Any chance of Fournette to the Bucs? Can I interest you in that at all?
I mean, that's not crazy, is it? I mean, what kind of pass protector is Leonard Fournette? I don't even really know off the top of my head. I'm assuming fine, since he played every down last year. And, you know, it wasn't like an issue. It wasn't like a meme, Leonard Fournette's pass protection. That certainly, again, that's a greater than non-0% chance you'd have to assume there. Because Ronald Jones seems to have kind of won the job by default. I mean, Dare Ogunbowale, purely a third down back. Keyshawn Vaughn got totally lost in the COVID offseason, literally got COVID. So that is another situation, where I didn't think, for some reason, did not make that connection to my initial sweep through the list. But definitely makes sense on paper.
I am definitely not rooting for people who drafted Fournette early, like people who drafted him in round three or whatever. I just don't want them to get a bailout here. I don't want him to fall into a really good situation. I shouldn't care. I have no exposure to Fournette at all. You could kind of sort of see this coming. Maybe not a release coming, but certainly a disappointing season coming. And I really don't want to see them get bailed out of their Fournette situation.
I will say I'm a little surprised. I guess without the coronavirus, if the salary cap situation hadn't gotten super weird, I bet someone would have traded for Leonard Fournette. Not that he's like super expensive.
Right. Yeah.
But he's definitely expensive for a running back. And I feel like he would have at least gotten a fifth or sixth round pick in a normal offseason. And maybe now teams are, you know, really getting the hypervigilance of the salary cap the next two seasons. That probably played a factor in it. Because, I mean, as much as we joke about Leonard Fournette, he probably shouldn't have gotten cut. But I understand why he got cut, though.
Oh, no question about it. And you're right. What a send off to have the press conference immediately following.
Couldn't get a sixth. Couldn't get a seventh. What do you want me to do?
Not really a hey, we want to thank Leonard for his contributions to the team over the years. No. Just a hey, couldn't get a sixth. So here we are.
No, I was surprised by that. Even if things were truly toxic, I'm going to actually use this word genuinely. It was kind of not classy by the Jaguars. Probably should have been a little classier. Yeah. I usually only use that word ironically, but yeah, the Jags could have been probably a little classier with how they handled that.
It's fair to say. So let's get into, you know, because we're just not going to be able to fully resolve the Fournette situation until we have a landing spot there. But crazy news. Again, takeaway, I'm adding Reichwell Armstead wherever I can. You already owned him. And Chris Thompson, probably the safest option in that, in what remains of that, like just smoldering ruins of a backfield. But let's talk about some of these situations, because it's at least, I don't know, it's like a third of the NFL has sort of non-trivial coaching changes that we need to talk about. And I'm sure at some point over the past couple months, it's been discussed on this podcast, many other podcasts. But I feel like now that we're, you know, within a couple weeks of kickoff of the regular season, it is worth checking in with all the teams that have new OCs, teams that have new head coaches. Where are they at? How are we feeling about them now? Because again, this has been, you know, a situation that all of us have talked about in some form. Continuity should have mattered more in this offseason than any other, right? No OTAs, no real opportunity to get together with rookies until just a few weeks ago, right? Assistant coaches and head coaches are like meeting each other for the first time when training camps come together. It must have been crazy in Carolina, right? Where everything is new and these guys are just literally getting together for the first time. So I want to walk through whole bunch of these teams that have particularly new OCs and head coaches, and we'll just talk about where they're at. You're probably as close to the front lines of like reading as many beat reporters as you possibly can for RotoWorld purposes as anyone. So I feel like if anybody has their finger on the pulse of like a whole bunch of teams and where their coaching staffs are at right now, it's probably you. So I've kind of divided these into tiers where I don't really think that an OC change or a head coaching change is going to make a material difference with the offense. That's kind of where we'll start. I really doubt, for example, that in Dallas, in Philadelphia, in Minnesota, and in Chicago, like we may have new OCs and we have a new head coach in Dallas and Mike McCarthy. I don't expect that to have a dramatic change on Dallas's offense. Any of the, I should throw the Rams in here too, but any of those five teams, so the Rams, the Bears, the Vikings, Philly, Dallas, do you see any reason for worry or reason for enthusiasm with the OC changes?
No, I really don't. I mean, they were in that tier, perfectly tiered by the great Andy Barons, basically. They were still going to be the Matt Nagy offense in Chicago. Minnesota, I mean, in theory, it's a big change, but I mean, I may get into it when we talk about Kevin Stefanski, but I mean, they were kind of already the shadow Gary Kubiak offense last year. You know, like he was the offensive advisor. And
yeah.
The system they ran looked a lot like a Gary Kubiak system. Yeah, a lot like. So no big change there. I mean, Philly, no change. Dallas, you know, I guess.
Philly, by the way, hat tip to Philly for just going, like, I think they have no offensive coordinator right now, right? Like, they just got rid of Mike Rowe, and it's like a council of elders approach, but it's really Pretty Doug much. Peterson's offense, yeah.
And yeah, the Rams, I think, for the first time, do have an offensive coordinator, right? But it's still going to be Sean McVay. But the only one on that list is Dallas. I guess I believe Mike McCarthy that he's not going to be the play caller, and he's going to let Kellen Moore do his thing. That would maybe be the only one to watch, but it seemed like part of the reason he got the gig was because he agreed to let Kellen Moore still have autonomy. So, yeah, Dallas kind of belongs in the no change tier.
Yeah, so not a lot of worry for me here either. If I can, we've talked about Chicago enough already on the pod, but just quickly, so it's Bill Lazor who takes over as OC, as you say. It's Matt Nagy's offense entirely. So Lazor probably there because he has a little bit of history with Nick Foles. He was his position coach during like that crazy Foles season, 2013, I think it was, where he barely threw an interception, had a bunch of YOLO passes that were brought down by like Riley Cooper and whoever else, right? It was just a miracle season, 9 yards per attempt, crazy stuff. Like the Bears haven't actually revealed their opening week quarterback yet. I can't believe it's going to be Trubisky. Like you bring in Foles, you decline Trubisky's fifth year option. Like it's going to be Foles, right?
I do think it's going to be Foles. I mean, there was some beat writer scuttlebutt that like the lost offseason was somehow a point in favor of Trubisky, but I mean, it's not like we know Foles has experience with Matt Nagy, and you don't go out and literally trade for Nick Foles to just put him on the bench behind Mitchell Trubisky.
Right.
Trading for Nick Foles, especially after that season, like that's a power move. Like you're not doing that. like you're serious about Nick Foles at that point. So I think he maybe just they're worried about, you know, he knows the system, but just maybe not the supporting cast. But I mean, the Bears, they seem to be at their Bortles point with Mitchell Trubisky, where they're beginning the moving on process. And I still would be very surprised if it was Trubisky week one.
You should think about branding that some sort of Bortles horizon that a team that a team crosses with a disappointing quarterback. That's a really good idea.
The Bortles event horizon.
I love it.
Yeah, we got to work on it. We got to get you a T-shirt. You're the T-shirt guy. We're getting you a Bortles shirt. Yeah, I work on branding. I'm going to actually pause right now and start sending some texts to the agent that I definitely have and yeah, get to work on that.
All right. I'm with you on all these teams. And I should also say that I'm with you on Minnesota. That felt very much like a Gary Kubiak offense last year already. So I doubt very much that the loss of Stefanski, who had been like a Vikings lifer, pretty much. I'm sure he'll be missed. But that already felt like a Kubiak system. So yeah. Pretty easy transition there. And now we have this tier that I don't know. I'm kind of into the OC changes. I'm kind of into the head coaching changes. Let's start with Cleveland and Stefanski's new home. It's head coach Kevin Stefanski and it's offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt. I'm not sure we know just yet who's actually going to be calling plays on game days. Again, Stefanski had spent an eternity with the Vikings, like by NFL standards, an absolute eternity. Really long time. I'm pretty sure he had coached every Minnesota quarterback since Brett Favre. Again, a little bit of a play calling mystery there. Van Pelt has a kind of fun history as an OC. He was on hand for that one good Josh Freeman season. also worked with Andy Dalton, with Aaron Rodgers more recently. So what do you make of this? I was going to call it a mess, but I'm not going to call it a mess because I think there's some reason for optimism about Cleveland. Obviously, we went into last offseason really thinking big things were potentially ahead for Baker Mayfield. None of that happened. He was super skittish last year, really ugly film, but it was also not really a grown-up coaching staff last year, and they made bizarre decisions near the goal line, and a lot became a mess. The line was a mess. A lot was a mess. So where are you at with this team?
If they got for the Browns, they don't have Freddie Kitchens in the COVID year, by the way. Imagine if the COVID year was right. Last year and you put right. That uncertainty on top of Freddie Kitchens. And so, you know, if you believe that the 2019 Minnesota Vikings were purely a Kevin Stefanski production, which I think most people, I mean, then you're very excited about this hire because someone who has experience. So the Browns upgraded their line, but Kevin Stefanski mm-hmm. is someone who has experience scheming around a bad offensive line. He's the play action guru. Who Baker Mayfield was one of the league's worst quarterbacks in play action. I think Pro Football Focus said he was the worst. His quarterback rating on play action was under 70, which is just like inconceivable, really. Like,
yeah.
Those are supposed to be the layups and dunks. So something, you know, should be layups for a quarterback was very difficult for Baker Mayfield last year. So you bring in the guy who's great at play action, Kevin Stefanski, to fix Baker Mayfield there. And see, on paper, I just was never positive where Gary Kubiak ended and Kevin Stefanski began in Minnesota. But on paper, he is the perfect hire to fix these troubles on play action, scheme around, you know, so upgraded offensive line, but an offensive line didn't have a lot of offseason time to develop chemistry. And so, again, Stefanski was good at that with an undermanned line. in Minnesota, and yeah, he seems like the man for the job. So it's a good hire. But we have thought that many, many, many times in Cleveland. You know, we're making fun of Freddie Kitchens now. I mean, I thought it was very bold, but I was in favor of the Browns keeping Freddie Kitchens at the time. So shows how much we know. Kevin Stefanski feels like the right hire, but we know that just because he feels like the right hire, especially in Cleveland, will not mean that he is the right hire.
Minnesota certainly ran a lot of two tight end stuff with Stefanski there, and obviously the Browns have the personnel to do a fair amount of that as well.
I have no idea why I just interrupted you, but they have like the personnel to clone that approach this year, where they've got two very good receivers, they've got two intriguing tight ends, and they have the personnel to basically clone what they did, and two very good running backs. So yeah, they can really try to replicate what they did with the Vikings last year.
Where are you at on Mayfield?
Very low, just because it looked like, I mean, it's so weird because, you know, he was so good as a rookie, I thought. But last year, I mean, I forget the word you used. It was a similar word to what I'm about to use, but he was just frenetic. I mean, he totally collapsed, basically, like a player with zero confidence. Like you said, probably a lot of it was the coaching staff, because a better coaching staff might have been able to figure out ways to at least get him some easy completions to kind of prevent his confidence from just bottoming out. But it seemed like his confidence just bottomed out last year. And I mean, he was just frenetic, which you never want to see from an NFL quarterback, where he was just looked like he was expecting things to go wrong almost every play. Yes, and they did go wrong almost every play.
Because things so often did go wrong. And they couldn't keep the pass rush off of him for a chunk of the season. It had like a last days of Mark Bulger feel to it, right? Where he just seemed really shell-shocked, and by the end of the year, you know, a lot of bad things were going to happen when Baker Mayfield tried to improvise. So it was rough.
I guess more in college, like where a good defense, like a good SEC or ACC defense, just knows the team they're playing has an overwhelmed offensive line, and they're just not going to respect the pass at all. And like I said, they just didn't respect the Browns passing game at all. And they were just in Baker Mayfield's face, you know, within like 2 seconds every play. And hopefully, famous last words, knock on wood. I won't actually knock on wood, so I don't want to screw up the audio, but it can't get any worse.
Right. That seems perfectly fair to say. So I guess the issue with Baker is what the actual upside is. Like we love his receivers, love the personnel in the team. There's not obviously a great deal of rushing upside to Baker Mayfield. So I suppose I'm with you. I don't have him anywhere near my top 12, just because I can't. Like anybody that I keep near the top 10 or top 12 at the quarterback position has to be somebody that I can reasonably imagine finishing as like a top 5 guy. I'm not quite there with Mayfield.
No, I think I've got him probably maybe too low, kind of in like the QB 22 to 23 range. But I just think this year is going to be about kind of rebuilding that offense from scratch. And it's hard to see where the upside is going to be for Baker Mayfield this year. Even if he has a good season, even if he stabilizes his career, it's hard to see like where the fantasy upside will come from.
Another offense with a lot of new stuff, Denver. New offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur, who's been like not great as a head coach, but kind of fun as an OC at times, right? Like an absolutely terrible record as a head coach, but some pretty fun seasons as an OC. He was also on hand for, I believe, the Big Foles year in Philly. He was on hand for the Case Keenum season, the one-off Case Keenum season in Minnesota. And there's just a lot of new stuff here. They bring in Melvin Gordon. They draft Jerry Jeudy, who everyone's excited about. A lot of new toys for. Can I call him your boy, Drew Lock? Is that your guy?
I'll accept my boy for Drew Lock. I will. He's the first Missouri quarterback I at least want to root for. Like Blaine Gabbert, a lot of Mizzou fans were just disgusted with. I felt no need to root for Blaine Gabbert of the pros. I feel the need to at least root for Drew Lock. So I will accept my boy.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited about Denver, and I'm only like super flex excited about Drew Lock, I guess. I don't have him anywhere else, but I do have him in a super flex, and there's a lot of fun pieces there.
See, Drew Lock, I mean, if you're looking for like untapped, like wild fantasy upside, I mean, Drew Lock he's an excellent athlete and he thinks big play. So when it comes to Drew Lock and Pat Shurmur, though, Drew Lock is not exactly what I think of when I think of like a West Coast offense skill set.
Right.
Or, you know, efficiency, make sure you get the easy completions. I mean, we'll take shots down the field, but they have to be set up. That is not really Drew Lock's style whatsoever.
Drew Lock is like, hey, look, I can throw 70 yards.
Yeah, let me do it. And he can. He actually can do it, too. It does strike me as a very odd fit. So the Broncos, I was shocked at the way the Broncos built their roster this offseason, that they actually, I mean, shocked in a good way, that they actually decided, you know, to put their young quarterback, even if he's a very risky bet, they're trying to put him in position to succeed. They're doing all they can, giving him all the weapons they can. You look like someone like Sam Darnold, who is, you know, probably twice the raw talent, and he gets nothing. And then a much riskier bet like Drew Lock, he gets all this stuff, gets set up to succeed. So I really loved the approach from the Broncos. I am not, again, I'm just not sure about the Pat Shurmur, Drew, especially, you know, this truncated offseason. I don't know if Shurmur's going to be able to instill West Coast principles into Drew Lock in such a short period of time. But
no, it's a really good point. Are you in or out on Noah Fant?
I'm in. I mean, that was for a rookie tight end season. It was one of the better rookie tight end yardage efforts of the 21st century. So I just really like when rookies kind of not like he hit his like absolute ceiling or whatever, but Noah Fant like lived up to his pre-draft billing to me as a rookie. Whenever a player does that, like their actual rookie season, I really take notice. And certainly seems like, I hate that this is the comp because I wish I could think anymore. He definitely seems like an Aaron Hernandez type talent, where he can be just a real play, like a genuine playmaker at the tight end position. So I am in on, I don't know if I'm in on Noah Fant for this year. It's such a deep step crop of like tight end one, two, board. It's a crazily deep year of like tight end 8 to 20. You know, and Noah Fant is such a crowded supporting cast with a new offensive coordinator. It's hard to be like fully in on him and redraft, but I am definitely in on Noah Fant and his NFL future.
Yeah, as you say, I tend to avoid that sort of minefield that exists at tight end. Basically, between like once we get outside the top four, I just wait for like an hour and then I take Blake Jarwin. That's pretty much the way I like. For other people, that might be Eric Ebron. That might be like any of a number of Chris Herndon. It might be any of a number of guys. But I tend to wait out that entire like two or three tiers there where you can find all the formerly great Iowa tight ends. One more team I want to quickly mention in this tier that I'm kind of into is Miami. They bring in Chan Gailey. Chan Gailey has a fun history with Ryan Fitzpatrick. What are the chances, this probably doesn't happen, but what are the chances that Miami just rolls with Fitzmagic all season and we just get a full year of Chan Gailey is the guy who gave us that miraculous Tyler Thigpen season back, a half season back in the day. That was so much fun. I like Chan Gailey. It's so easy to root for Ryan Fitzpatrick. What are the chances they just give Tua a redshirt year?
I'd still say pretty close to zero, just because, I mean, we all know Fitz, like he has really mastered the art of flying too close to the sun. And, you know, and unless Tua, you know, so they have Josh Rosen on the roster. So they know what happens if you throw a quarterback who's not ready into the fire too quickly. So unless Tua is just clearly not ready after, you know, the non-existent offseason, 16 games is in play for Ryan Fitz. But I do think though, he's not having like rave camp raves, but the Dolphins press has been saying, yeah, there's, you can definitely see the upside here. I do think Tua will get will make starts. I'm very comfortable betting on Tua making starts this year. Chan Gailey's kind of weird because he's kind of known for like balanced, like not run heavy. He's known for like balanced attacks, but kind of those past few years, most recent years as play caller, he had started to open the offense up more and kind of like adapt and change, even though he's one of the oldest play callers in the league. Seemed to run kind of more of the offense the Dolphins seemed to enjoy playing last year and that Ryan Fitzpatrick always enjoys playing. So there's definitely going to be some fantasy points here. That's a long way of saying there's going to be some fantasy points in this Dolphins offense, basically. But
yeah, I just want them to just run it back with Fitzpatrick and Parker, and we'll see what Preston Williams can give us. Like, I'm pretty into it. I hate to see Ryan Fitzpatrick on a bench, but I don't want to spend too much time on Miami because I still want to get to I've got four teams left on this list, and I've got three teams in this sort of tier where I think a lot of concern is warranted. And we've already talked about one, so we can just skip Jacksonville and Jay Gruden. We've mentioned the players that Jay Gruden has ties to, Chris Thompson being the biggest among them. Again, they're going to be chasing points all year. I want to talk about Washington, and I want to talk about the Giants. We can start with the Washington football team. Ron Rivera is our head coach, and Scott Turner, branch on the Turner tree, Norv's child, Scott Turner.
Norville, I got to correct you, Scott. Norville.
Norville. No, you're right. Good call. Good call. Scott is the OC. He moves with Rivera from Carolina. He'd been Cam's position coach. He had been Teddy Bridgewater's position coach, I believe, in Minnesota. I don't know exactly what to expect from him as an OC. There's been, I know, a little bit of talk about Washington increasing tempo a little bit this season. Dwayne Haskins is a guy I'm not going to try to talk anybody into Dwayne Haskins necessarily in year two. He did finish his year pretty strong. He had a couple touchdowns in each of their last two games. Didn't throw any picks, I want to say, in that stretch. It was a nice sort of punctuation mark on an otherwise somewhat forgettable season. We have a mess at running back, and who knows, maybe they will add Leonard Fournette and that would still leave them with a mess at running back. It wouldn't necessarily fix anything. What do they have that you want outside of Terry McLaurin?
Well, say one of the things we usually know about Norv and Scott is that they love the foundational three down almost every snap back. And so one of the only things we know, like truly know about Scott Turner, quote unquote, know, is clearly not going to happen because that's not on the roster this year. They're going to have a running back committee. So one of the only like hashtag Scott facts really isn't like useful. So I have hope for Terry McLaurin basically, because last year, I mean, Scott Turner did an amazing job scheming the ball to DJ Moore, making sure DJ Moore got his looks every week. So yeah, we can have hope for Terry McLaurin, who showed so much as a rookie. Not for injury, might have been a full-on like fantasy supernova. So we can have a lot of hope for Terry McLaurin. Dwayne Haskins, it's weird because you mentioned he did finish the season hot. So I don't know if Dwayne Haskins has like the movement skills that a modern NFL quarterback needs to succeed. But I would have figured, kind of based on his college profile and based on how bad his stats were last year, that he was like not an aggressive quarterback, that he was kind of like failing, like, you know, hurried and like having lots of like dumb short incompletions. But he's actually a very aggressive quarterback by like NFL Next Gen stats and like Pro Football Focus advanced stats. So maybe there is some sneaky upside there. Dwayne has, obviously, we know not as a QB1, not even really as a QB2, but definitely like in the super flex. And he showed just enough basically to not get rosened. Like I agree with Washington not rosening Dwayne Haskins, and just where he deserves the second year. And Scott Turner, yeah, we don't know a ton. We don't know if he's full on Norville or not, but it was not a bad year for Scott Turner, you know, in a tough situation with so little quarterback talent behind Cam Newton last year in Carolina. So there's not zero reasons for optimism when it comes to Washington's offense.
That's a ringing endorsement. Not zero reasons for optimism. That's awesome.
I don't know why the worst interrupter in the world. I just immediately, urgently had to share my Antonio Gibson thought, which was that.
Well, that's where I was going to go next. The backfield, assuming that Fournette doesn't get added to this mix. I understand a lot of the reason for enthusiasm about Antonio Gibson. I feel like they did him a little bit of a disservice by dropping a Christian McCaffrey comp on him as early as they did. That's crazy. He carried 33 times in college and they were with spectacular results, right? It was like 10 yards a carry or some ridiculous thing like that. Something that only happens at Memphis. But it's still 33 carries. And I can't wrap my head around the notion of asking a kid with so little experience in backfields period to pass protect in the NFL. That seems sketchy. So I can imagine a path to Antonio Gibson having fantasy value as like a slot guy. I mean, obviously, beyond McLaurin, I have no notion of who the second best receiving threat on this team is. I really don't. So it might be Gibson. I just don't know if that actually comes at the expense of snaps to any other running back. So this backfield, go talk about it.
No, my thought on Gibson is that, so he's an offensive weapon type. You know, maybe he'll eventually be a running back, but clearly right now he'd be labeled an offensive weapon. And my thought that I just can't shake is it's hard enough to get those guys going in the offense in a regular year. And then this, the COVID year,
right,
where just no reps, you know, no meetings that weren't over Zoom. I just think everyone, including Washington, is being very aspirational when it comes to Antonio Gibson's potential role. And I mean, maybe he's just a special talent who was misused and should have been running way more in college. But I just think it's going to be very hard for kind of like the ideal Antonio Gibson outcome in Washington. And for me, it's just going to be undead zombie Adrian. I'm drafting Antonio Gibson over Adrian Peterson. Even with the skepticism, I'd rather bet on that unknown upside. But yeah, it kind of just has the feel of an undead zombie Adrian Peterson here, does it not?
Oh, it totally does. And Peterson is, you know, this is a boring enough pick, but he's the guy that I've actually landed, because there's somebody in almost every draft that I've been in for the last 2 weeks that is fully in on Antonio Gibson as like a sixth rounder, seventh rounder, something like that. And I don't know. I just can't go there. I can envision him as a in the 10th, in the 11th as a flyer. But I can't, like, you're still getting potential league winners in round six, round seven. I just can't, I don't see him that way.
Yeah. With the lack of offseason hype and offseason news, you know, and the lack of Roto-World blurbs that there weren't nearly as many like ADP rocket ships this year, but Antonio Gibson definitely an ADP rocket ship, and where it's probably gotten beyond the bounds of what is reasonable.
Well, what are you going to do? Not re-report it when a coach says that he's Christian McCaffrey,
exactly.
Right?
Like, so let me get on a mini Roto World rant, where people get on us like hyping people. I mean, that's our job. We can't help it that the coach just said something extremely stupid. We have to blurb it still, and we try to add context to it. But yeah, anyways, Roto World rant over.
So last team in this tier that I honestly don't know what to make of, but I love the weapons that the Giants have. I love them, from Barkley to the receiving core. Love everything about it. Joe Judge is our head coach, and he has a pretty strong high school vibe, right?
Like, I didn't know where
we're running
going with
laps
that.
And we're taking names off jerseys, and we're like, I don't know if he's withholding water from players or like doing all the other things that high school coaches did in 1988. Right. But like, he has a very strong high school vibe to him. Don't know what to make of that. And then they have a fully grown adult in Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator. And like, I don't know, Jason Garrett obviously became a punchline in the later years in Dallas. He was on hand for the early years of Tony Romo and did some fine work as an offensive coordinator in Dallas, too. He's another one of these guys like Stefanski that is just so associated with one team for so long. So what do you make of the Giants, and what do you make of Joe Judge in particular? Like, I'd be really nervous if I were a Giants fan.
I mean, like you said, the stunts are just unspeakably high school. And I mean, for a while, I mean, he wasn't. Was he not like saying their name? I think it was even beyond not putting the names in the jersey. Like, he wasn't like saying them or something, or he wasn't like acknowledging.
I think that's right. Yep.
He wasn't acknowledging depth chart position. So I don't know what to expect from Joe Judge, but even Jason Garrett feels like the world's most known commodity. It's been like 7 or 8 years since he was allowed to call plays. So even Jason Garrett, I feel like I quite don't know what to expect. Because, yeah, he was not allowed to call plays like the final, seriously, like 7 or 8 years in Dallas. So kind of it was an interesting offensive coordinator hire to me. But while I'm saying I don't know what to expect necessarily from Jason Garrett, yeah, it's hard not to like the offensive setup. Because it's another team like the Jaguars, should be lots of negative game script. And Daniel Jones, you know, I kind of still not a huge Daniel Jones fan, but I wasn't expecting like YOLO Daniel Jones. I was expecting like Daniel Jones to be boring bad. Instead, he's more trending. I'm not even saying he's bad, trending towards more YOLO bad, and someone who will make plays. And he had a lot of, he was like a spiked weak guy last year. And like you said, he's got the setup for that this year. He's got a really tough schedule to begin the season, which I try not to get too lean too hard into schedule analysis. It's important, but you know, we don't truly know. Yeah, I don't know what to expect from Jason Garrett. But I am very interested in Daniel Jones. He's been kind of one of my favorite like streamer type picks. If I'm in a deeper league, like enjoying nabbing Daniel Jones is like part of a two quarterback tandem.
Yeah, Jones had one of those seasons where, like, I mean, not every game was a gem, and they didn't necessarily all pass the eye test. But when he blew up, it was like supernova. You won the week blow up.
And I did not expect that from him as a rookie, especially. So,
oh, not at all. Yeah, I think the way you put it is right. Like, I expected a boring bad season, and I got a really fun bad season. Like, bad is wrong. Like, it was
a
really encouraging year.
But
it was like fun bad in the way that like Eli could give us like some fun bad weeks back in the day. Right. Like, it would be, you know, I fully expect him to turn the ball over 2-3 times a game. But there's just not a huge penalty for that in standard scoring system. So it doesn't matter. And if he's able to produce 4 or 5 touchdowns, as he did occasionally, like that, like you're going to win a week. So he was fun. I hope Jason Garrett can not restrain him too much. Obviously, the safest thing about this offense is Saquon. If he stays healthy, he's 2,000 yards. End of story there. How do you sort out the wide receivers for the Giants?
Almost impossible, except for that. I know I have Golden Tate third, this because Golden Tate, you know, one of the more underrated NFL players probably the past 10 or 15 years. But I'm, for a couple of years now, I'm just, you know, going by the good old eye test that never fails. Golden Tate has not quite seen the same. I think Golden Tate is definitely kind of like, well, it's not a controversial opinion to say Golden Tate's like in the sunset of his career. I think Golden Tate is maybe getting a little too much like value, love, and fantasy drafts. Sterling Shepard, you know, I really like Darius Slayton, but I understand to me, so everyone's focusing on the fact that Darius Slayton's production came when like everyone else was hurt. But to me, is that a bad thing for a fifth round rookie that he was thrown into the fire and like still immediately produced and like created a lot of big plays? Yeah. So Darius Slayton, I think people are kind of overthinking, but it is when he's got these compilers like Sterling Shepard and Evan Engram, both who have kind of concerning injury histories, maybe the targets won't be there for Darius Slayton to really return wide receiver three or four value early in the season. But the only one of those, that I really end up excited to have on my roster is Darius Slayton. Just because, you know, Sterling Shepard's more of a floor than a ceiling player. Evan Engram, it's just, I just feel like I don't know what to expect from Evan Engram anymore with the injury history. And, like, didn't get to really see much of him with Daniel Jones. And the only one I'm excited about is Darius Slayton. But the ADP is kind of like, he's kind of like the ADP dead zone where it never quite feels like a bargain. It never quite feels like a reach. But he's just usually easier not to take than he is to take. So, yeah, I
guess I feel the same way here. And I feel like my ranks are almost fraudulent because I'm fairly sure that I have Shepard higher and I never get Shepard. Like, I never land Shepard. But I'm sure I have him like five spots higher, six spots higher. And Slayton's the guy that I end up with.
Me too. I've had them very close. I think right now I might have Sterling like one or two spots. I have them very, very close. But basically just been punting on that, like a very courageous fantasy analyst punting on that situation all summer with my rankings.
Where you just wrap up every analysis and you're like, yeah, I like him in a best ball. Exactly. Okay, moving on.
Exactly. Yeah. I had Slayton high for a while. The rest of the Roto-World staff kind of did spook me into getting very rare in America in 2020. I actually like listened to their arguments and kind of let them move me. And I did move Slayton down in the rankings a little bit.
Yeah.
But I secretly still love Darius Slayton.
Yeah, I'm with you there. We have to close with the one team where just, like, everything is new and any one of these things could be exciting on its own, but when everything associated with a team is new and there's a plague going on, right, that has truncated the offseason and all that, like, plague.
That's how dead I am from 2020.
That's what 2020 has done to us.
I just involuntarily laughed.
The Carolina Panthers, literally everything is new. New quarterback, who comes from the Saints. We like that. New offensive coordinator, who comes from LSU, which we like.
And the Saints. Matt Rhule.
And the Saints, yeah. And Sean Payton before that. And we get Matt Rhule from Fun Places, from Baylor. Like, all of this is fun. They have definitely picked the wrong season to have two new coordinators and a new head coach and new terminology and a new playbook and a new quarterback, right? Like, they surely have. But it hasn't really affected my ranks for anyone. Some of this is just the sort of default where I just expect Carolina because they have, as Matt Harmon put it on a podcast a couple days ago, but like he's been a Carolina follower and an off and on fan for a long time. And even he looks at this defense and he's like, who are these guys? Who are these goofballs? Right. And I feel the same way. Like, it's a no name defense that is probably not going to be any good. This is a team that, like Jacksonville, is just going to be chasing points all year, playing with deficits. And there is a path here. And I'd feel better about this if it was an offense that, you know, where everything had some, where there was at least some level of continuity and Teddy Bridgewater was stepping into it. But no, everything's new. Anyway, there's a path for Teddy Bridgewater to throw a ton of passes this season. He's got good receivers. They're all just meeting for the first time a couple weeks ago. Yeah. Like, where are you at on the Panthers?
And like, you left out of the new, like a new $10 million receiver in Robbie Anderson. So
yeah.
You don't even quite know how things will unfold in the receiver core. Behind DJ Moore. And so Teddy Bridgewater, you know, the easy analysis is that he's a conservative short passer, and it is borne out, in fact, by the statistics. I think his average throw last year, I had the stat in my head for a while, I hope I'm not butchering it, was 3.3 yards shy of the sticks per next gen stats, which was the lowest in the league. I mean, we know that's kind of the Saints offense, but even Drew Brees was more like 2.4, 2.5. So, I mean, it's not a meme. It's not a narrative. Like, Teddy Bridgewater is a very, very conservative quarterback. And so still bet on, like, you know, bushels of targets for Christian McCaffrey and DJ Moore, who really fit well with Teddy Bridgewater's skill set. But I wonder about Teddy Bridgewater as like a come from behind quarterback. If he's the kind of guy who, with that conservative mindset, right, can get into situations where he like will not succeed. That's kind of overthinking the situation. He's a quarterback who is accurate and is going to have to throw a lot. And there probably will be some sneaky fantasy value there. But I do wonder if like Teddy Bridgewater is like getting set up to fail in like a weird way that no one is considering. But anyways, yeah, Teddy Bridgewater on paper looks like the consummate 2020 streamer.
Yeah, I can definitely talk myself into the idea of Teddy in an offense that looks, I mean, it's not going to look like LSU's offense exactly, because like everything was a touchdown in LSU's offense, right? So no, it's not going to look like that, but a lot of great short and intermediate targets there. I assume the ball is going to come out quick. When you're throwing, like, whatever, he's throwing short passes, those short passes are going to DJ Moore, they're going to Christian McCaffrey, those can become big gains no matter how many yards they happen to spend in the air. What are your feelings on Curtis Samuel right now? Have you landed him anywhere? Like, he was one of the huge disappointments of last season. It's one of those years where, like, you look at it in total and it doesn't seem, well, that wasn't so bad. He scored 6-7 touchdowns, whatever. That wasn't a total disaster, but I don't think he ever had more than 70 receiving yards. There was no big week for all the hype that he came into the year with. He literally never had a week that you know got you a fantasy win. That said, he had done some things previously that made us really encouraged for his 2019. Like, he was a pretty fun player for a handful of games in 2018. So where are you at on him now? Have you completely given up on him? Where does he fall in your ranks?
I've mostly completely given up, because I was part of the of the fade brigade on Curtis Samuel. I was like, who the heck are we talking about? Curtis Samuel last year, just because
that's how far, yeah, you
exactly
pushed him.
When
from
you come
your
to
mind,
manufactured,
yeah,
touch. So the thing with Samuel and me last year was just, he's a manufactured touch player. Like, I need him to prove to, yeah, me that he's more than a manufactured touch player before I can like rocket him up these rankings. And yeah, unfortunately, like, nothing he did last year disproved that. And I'm not saying he's like undraftable, but to me, he's like pure wide receiver 5. Like, he's in the wide receiver 50 to like 65 range, and no real expectations, yeah, for Curtis Samuel. He's an explosive athlete. We know he could be a special playmaker, but just, yeah, when you're a manufactured touch player and you haven't demonstrated more than that, like Percy Harvin was a manufactured touch player who eventually, you know, he demonstrated more than that. So you could go in on someone like Percy Harvin. Curtis Samuel is basically like Percy Harvin without like the standalone value, for lack of a better term. It's like, can he create offense on his own? And to me, we just still haven't seen that from Curtis Samuel, and I'm not using a draft pick on that.
Yeah, that all makes sense. Are you out on Robbie Anderson as well?
I am.
That's just a bad
shame.
Sort of stylistic,
yeah, because I think, yeah, he's more than just a deep ball receiver too. I thought he was always strangely utilized in New York, but I mean, yeah, I just, not even knowing if he's the number 2 or the number 3 receiver, it is one of the most conservative quarterbacks in the NFL, like, yeah, I said, which I believe is more than just a narrative. A player I've always loved that, yeah, unfortunately, I'm just out on this year too.
Well, that was a lot of new stuff. I want to thank you for doing this. This was really helpful, just to sort of catch up. And I feel like, you know, especially right now, I have all these hometown leagues that have just sort of awakened to the fact that there's going to be a football season. And all these commissioners are like, oh, crap, we got to get this league together if we're going to do it. So I feel like it's helpful to people to walk through again some of the coaching changes. This has been really good. And it is always a pleasure to talk to you and that glorious mustache that I hate to see it go. Don't let that
final
happen.
Final public appearance. Like, it's official. Yeah, I've actually, it's already shaved. This is just a hologram. Now, I shaved it during the podcast. And yeah, you made an excellent point about the home leagues, by the way. That is a very real thing. Like, I've had all my home leagues, people are just now like, oh my God, like the season's in 9 days. Refreshing. It was a good podcast agenda.
Well, I'm glad we had a chance to do this. You guys, you should follow Pat on Twitter. He's at RotoPat. You surely follow him already. What's happening on RotoWorld this week? Anything to plug?
I'm putting out my final positional rankings, which you know, have been available in the draft guide, but kind of due on the free site late. You know, you want to cannibalize the draft guide. And I do that every year, put out free site rankings kind of very late in the game, so I'm at least on the record. Those will be coming out in the next 24 to 36 hours. So that's what I've got going this week.
Excellent. The RotoWorld podcast, also, by the way, really good with you're on there all the time. Josh Norris is great. We did the mock draft episode last week. That was a lot of fun.
You know.
You could say that about a lot of things. Remember Twitter before Denny?
Oh, I actually do not remember Twitter before Denny, so that would be hard.
Well, guys, check out not only that podcast, check out the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast with Charles Robinson and Therese Paylor, and the Yahoo Sports College podcast with Wetzel, with Thamel, with our friend Pat 40 from SI. Also, we're coming to you on trade deadline day in Major League Baseball. Check out the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball podcast with Scott Pianowski. You can follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I am at Andy Behrens. He, again, is at RotoPat. Tomorrow, Matt Harmon is back. Until then, we are out.
I'm Mike Lizikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News.
And I'm Dan Kleidman, Editor-in-Chief of Yahoo News.
We're the hosts of Skullduggery, a podcast that not only breaks down the news, but also breaks news.
We deliver authoritative analysis while drawing intriguing historical parallels from our decades of covering D.C. scandals.
With our current focus on the president and his administration's handling of the coronavirus, to the 2020 elections, we interview those helping to shape the stories.
So subscribe to and download Skullduggery wherever you listen to your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on social media at Skullduggery Pod.